Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage as we travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Escape from Communist Czechoslovakia. Hosted by the Alaska Veterans Museum, Yarmila Henderson, librarian with the Alaska Department of Veterans Affairs and current Girdwood resident, shared stories of growing up in Czechoslovakia and ultimately escaping the communist country in 1982 at the Experience Theater in Anchorage.
Thank you. My name is Henderson, Yarmila Henderson. I am librarian with the Department of Veterans Affairs for 20 years. As you can see and detect my accent, I was born and raised in what used to be Czechoslovakia. I have been living in the United States for 30 years. I am revealing my age. I was born in May 6, 1953 in Prague in Czechoslovakia. This country is not on the map anymore. The country split in 1993 or 4. It was amicable divorce. The Czechs were drinking beer, the Slovaks were drinking slivovitz. It was not that perhaps smart move, but they did it. So back to my old country, Czechoslovakia. I will very shortly mention something from the history. Czechoslovakia came into existence after the First World War, 1918. The first president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, absolutely excellent person, politician, he was a professor, he knew several languages, unbelievable. And interestingly enough, his wife was an American lady. They befriended when they were students in Austro-Hungarian Empire in Vienna, before Czechoslovakia came into existence. And he really was starting to be interested and focus on the independent Czechoslovakia. He was even lecturing in the United States in Chicago University. And my generation, when the communists took over, we were not talking about this person because he was capitalist, bourgeois, president. They were only mentioning him that there was somebody like this. Czechoslovakia had all the possibilities when it was created. After the First World War, it was not an underdeveloped country at all. But Czechoslovakia, 30s, Hitler coming into power, problem. Nobody pays attention to it. There is a Munich conference. Czechoslovakia was forced to give up Sudetenland, the northwest, southwest part of Czechoslovakia. And Hitler, it was his first step. And then within a year, he took over the whole country. I think that Hitler's plan was not to destroy Czechoslovakia because it was with factories, businesses, enterprises, and everybody was working for him. He took young people from Czechoslovakia to work in Germany during the Second World War. And, for example, my dad was one of those. He was born in 1920, so he was perhaps 20, 21 when he was forced to go to work in Germany. He was lucky enough to survive the Second World War in Frankfurt after 9 days of those air raids. And he was very nervous all his life, I remember. Later on, I realized why, because of this pressure and terrible experience. Czechoslovakia had, again, all the chances and possibilities after the Second World War, not being destroyed. There were some hits in some places. Prague got perhaps 3-4 hits, one in historical part, but not much damage, as, of course, nothing comparison to Poland, to Germany, nothing. And the government left immediately when Hitler took over Czechoslovakia in 1939 and were in London, the bourgeois, as we were told, bourgeois government, and the communists were going, they went to Soviet Union and spent the Second World War being indoctrinated and being given and advices and how to eventually take over. They leftists and the government from London, they return after the Second World War. First elections, communists got unfortunately a lot of votes, and they were supposed to cooperate with other parties. Yes, but they were waiting for the moment, and it started, there was so-called small crisis within the government, and they took advantage of it, and they did the coup, communist coup, in February 28, 1948. And it started. People were absolutely speechless. The Soviet Union, our shining example, was running since that time everything practically. The Czech communists were given advice, were sent advisors, and they started that Stalinist terror, which Stalin did in the 30s, and it was copied in Czechoslovakia after the communist coup. Especially, it was aimed against the members of other parties, not communists. And communists were very successful. They took away the private properties. Everything was run by the state, and people were put in jails, put in show trials, executed, sentenced to long terms in prison, and usually they were taken from prison and were working in labor camps. Again, Soviet Union, our shining example, they started to create those labor camps, gulags. And a typical case was uranium mines. They were mining uranium in absolute terrible conditions. No security, no kind of working conditions were awful. And uranium went to the Soviet Union for nothing. You know, we didn't get anything for it. The Czechs, Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia was renamed immediately Czechoslovak People's Republic. Later in the 60s, early 60s, Czechoslovak Socialist Republic. And in the mid-60s, around the 1968, became Czechoslovak Federative Socialist Republic. And communists, as I suggested, they did a very good job. They based their power on fear, because people were so afraid, and that pressure was immense on all population. Lucky people were able to escape in 48. It was one of those first kind of waves of leaving the country. Communists, they had the total control over everything in the state, all economy, healthcare, education, you name it. Immediately then they imposed terrible censorship and terrible propaganda. Their goal was no to fight the capitalist system, no exploitation and no unemployment. Everybody had to have a job. The Czechoslovak people were assigned the ID cards, and you had to have a stamp from your employer that you are working. And if you were not working, you were labeled the parasite on the society and could be put in jail or ended up in some terrible places. One of my early memories from early communist Czechoslovakia was when I was 5 years old, and we were spending our summers in small tiny village. And it was shortly after the collectivization of private farms in countryside. It was one of those terrible periods, and people, private farmers, they didn't want to join the cooperative farms or were against it. They were taken immediately into the labor camps, prisons, executed, and so forth. So we are in that small tiny village, and one morning, knock knock on the doors, and there is the leader of the cooperative farm and asking us, "Oh, comrades, come and help us pick up the American bugs from the fields." It was, I don't know whether you recall, it was that propaganda, communist propaganda, that American imperialists were infected and infested the fields in East Germany and Czechoslovakia. So we knew that, I was a child, but people later, we were talking about it, we knew that, it was normal potato bug, and the cooperative farmers or people, they were working, they didn't know how to stop it, or they didn't care. Maybe it was perhaps the case that they were not happy about the situation at all. So it was perhaps in 1958. As I mentioned, the first wave of refugees, 1948, and the communists immediately realized, oh, we will be losing some people, experienced people, educated people, specialists. So they started to watch the borders, but people still were leaving. 51, it was a cousin of my mom, and she left because her boyfriend left in 1950, and his father escaped from prison. And 1949, he was taken like a bourgeois capitalist, and he was sentenced to, originally to death penalty, then it was changed to life in prison, and he was working in some labor camp, and he managed to escape to Germany. Then he sent for some note for his wife and two sons in Prague, and they just were able to escape too. My mom's cousin, dating my future uncle Standa, knew that she didn't want to live in Czechoslovakia, and she was happy to do it too. At that time, there were some people, they were familiar with the border patrol patterns, they were walking, and they were helping those people. Later on, it started to be even dangerous this way, how to get out of Czechoslovakia, because the secret police was penetrating those circles. And by perhaps mid-50s, it was almost impossible to do it. Here and there, there were some people, they still did it. And the traveling to the West was absolutely forbidden, no possibility. And in, let's say, 57, 58, they were opening the East Germany for young people. And my uncle, my mom's brother, was one of those lucky ones. He got the trip. It was organized trip, and they went to East Germany, to Berlin, which was capital of the German Democratic Republic, and it was the Soviet zone. At that time, the Berlin Wall was not yet built, and the German people were still working in American zones or French zones. So, and they were helping people to escape from that Soviet zone to American zone, for example. It was the case of my uncle, and he did it, and his friend did it also, and they applied for asylum, and they got it, they got to the United States. My uncle ended up in Chicago area, which was typical Slavic area. All Czechs were quite big Czechs, and with Czech restaurants and so forth. And everybody was helping everybody, which was wonderful. It was very bad for the family because my mom and my mom was still not working yet, but my dad, immediately he had to report at his work that his relatives, my mom's cousin and my mom's brother, left illegally the country, and it was put in their records. And my dad was very unhappy about it, and because whenever there was possibility to be kind of get better position or something like that, oh, comrade, your brother-in-law is illegally living in the West. So they were kind of affecting the life of the families also with this policy. Society started to decline. We were three kids, my brother 4 years older than I, myself and my sister only a year and a half, and mom and dad. We were living in a tiny apartment. It was kitchen and the other room, so which meant five people sleeping in one room. My mom is still living in that apartment 65 years. And we didn't have, we had running water, we had bathroom, but not warm water. Once a week we were heating the big tank with water, with coal and wood. And once a week we had a bath. Other than that, we were using the sponge baths, whatever. And it was normal. Lack of apartments was starting immediately because the communists were trying to bring the labor from countryside into the cities to work in the factories, or factories they were building in the countryside also, and thus affecting the environment. They didn't care about it at all. So our stores were empty, almost empty. The basic foods were available, buttermilk, bread, and meat. It was, I don't know why, but there was always lack of meat, as far as I remember. Always waiting with my mom in front of the store, waiting for the meat. Whenever there was somebody learned, oh, they brought meat in that butcher shop, everybody was kind of like running over there and standing in line, even during the working hours, which was absolutely normal. The working ethic was horrible, you know, just, and there was a saying, if you are not stealing from the state, you are stealing from your family. So people were stealing from the, especially, for example, when you were building, in building or construction, so normal. And with the lack of basic things, goods, corruption, briberies came into existence, and it was the one of the typical features of the life in socialist communist countries, not only in Czechoslovakia, but I believe it was everywhere. When my son was at school, and perhaps fourth grade, they had space exploration. And of course they were told that Soviets were first in space. But I told, oh, Jimmy, you have to tell them, yes, Soviets were first in space, but they didn't have toilet paper. And, but can you believe that one teacher told me, oh my God, you know, just, they didn't have toilet. It's our American propaganda. And of course, my heart, blood pressure up, and I'm telling him, what do you mean? Have you ever experienced life without toilet paper? We didn't have toilet paper either. And it was in all those countries, I believe, and definitely Soviet Union, but they were first in space. And we were using the communist daily newspapers, the Red Law, and it was sort of like almost like vengeance. We were using it instead of toilet paper. And it was sort of like the life in communist country.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Yarmila Henderson of Girdwood. She shared the story of her escape from communist Czechoslovakia at an event hosted by the Alaska Veterans Museum on January 11th.
Schooling was free, of course, and again, people are, oh, you were so lucky that schooling was free. Okay, no problem. First grade, ninth grade, and high school. Okay, but even university education, college education was free. But everything had to be, again, according to redone according to the Soviet Union, our shining example. And immediately liquidation of scouts movement. Interestingly enough, Hitler did it also when he was occupying Czechoslovakia, because scouts leaders were fighting Hitler. Many of them perished. And the communists repeated it, and they got rid of scouts, and we had to become the shining red stars and red pioneers. At school, no discussions and only listening. And but I remember in first grade, being in 1959, our teacher asked the question in front of the class. Children, you have a choice. You can call me Mrs. Teacher or Comrade Teacher. And all the class, Mrs. Teacher. And so we called her Mrs. Teacher, but by 1960, when I was in second grade, our teacher told us, kids, you have to call me Comrade Teacher. And since that time, it was official, Comrade Teacher. Our first book, like first graders, second graders, we were assigned to read, was not a book written by the Czech author, as if we didn't have Czech writers, right? And it was a book written by the Soviet author, and it was called The Brave Schoolgirl. It was translated from Russian into Czech. And on top of it, they imposed on all schools and kids Russian language. It was absolutely no choice. We had to learn the language of our liberators. And we started not to like it that much, and especially later when we were teenagers, we started to call it language of our oppressors. And communists did very good job as far as suppressing religion. At especially in the big cities, the churches were almost empty. And because there was, again, fear that you could be reported, oh, this person goes to church, he's religious. And consequences were, for example, the kid could not go to high school or to university because the parents are religious people. So we didn't go in the city, but in small, tiny villages, we could do it. Interestingly enough, they tolerated over there. And I remember that our great aunt and great uncle always took us to the church, and Catholic church it was over there, but there were other religion also in Czechoslovakia. But we didn't talk about it in public, especially in Prague or at school, that we are going to church. Our healthcare was free, and again, people, oh my God, you're so lucky. But nobody here in the United States is asking about the quality. And the same, there's still people, they are admiring Castro's Cuba, that they have free education and free healthcare. And nobody is asking about the quality, and it's the key. The quality was tragically low. I don't know if you could imagine when you were taken in hospital and shared a room with eight other patients. And those hospitals were usually very old because the communists didn't have much money or didn't want to spend much money on that healthcare. The system was lagging behind the West in every aspect, and here It was awful because they didn't have the resources or they didn't want to spend money on modern equipment, updated hospitals, clinics. So it was really very bad situation. I remember having scarlet fever. I was perhaps 8 years old, and we were taken to infectious ward in hospital. And in the room, there were 12 beds. And we were about 7 kids jumping from bed to bed and having good time in the hospital. But nevertheless, the quality of care was even reflecting on the behavior of doctors and nurses. It was horrible. What we had to cope with, it was, I believe, that no American would go for it. When I came to the United States and I saw, you know, just experienced the behavior, you know, just how friendly and polite they are, oh my God. It was really, really something. And again, briberies and corruption. And if you felt, oh my God, my relative is going to the hospital, sometimes or very often you went to the hospital and, oh, putting into the pocket of doctor or nurses some kind of envelope with money or some alcohol, usually wine, and please pay attention to my whoever. So I don't want to talk about some tragic cases, but it happened that doctor was having, for example, birthday party and didn't go to see the small girl. She was brought to hospital and the girl died in the hospital and nothing happened. You know, just that was the situation. The high-ranking officials, central committee members, governmental officials, they had their own clinics and they had better care, but I still believe they didn't have the most current equipment technology like in the West. So that was our free healthcare. As I mentioned, my aunt and uncle defecting from Czechoslovakia, they got married, they have families, and we had American cousins in the United States. And my mom's cousin, she got daughter my age exactly, and son who is my sister age. And my their grandparents living in Czechoslovakia, oh my God, you know, it would be lovely if they can visit. But of course, at the very beginning, it was impossible. And but in the maybe 60s, it started to be a little bit, you know, better situation for from this point of view, that my great uncle, great aunt, the grandparents of my American cousins asked if and invited officially the grandchildren to visit, and the kids got permission. And I met my cousins when I was perhaps 10, 11 years old, in 63, 64. And Czechoslovakia was in the later 60s, a little bit, you know, the communists were sure we have control over the population. And people knew how to behave, what's acceptable, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. We lived like that. We were marching as they were whistling, and that was it. That was the situation. But all of a sudden, there were some communists. They wanted to do it a little bit differently. And I don't know if you remember the Prague Spring 1968. Absolutely astonishing situation. All of a sudden, people were starting to talk about things, topics that were absolute taboo in the past. And at school, I was 15 years old in the ninth grade, and we were talking and not paying attention, of course. And I remember one day we were trying to ask our teacher, who was a staunch communist, and she was so unhappy about the development during the Prague Spring in 1968. Oh, Mrs. Teacher, do you think that somebody can come and talk us about religion? She turned red and she was starting to scream, don't even mention religion in my class. But unfortunately, this came into an abrupt end. August 21st, 1968, Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. And we woke up, nobody was expecting anything, absolutely. Perhaps we should have expected it. And all of a sudden, Soviet tanks in the streets. They were not shooting, but here and there, there were. In Wenceslav Square, the Prague Museum still had some hits, and it's still obvious. But nevertheless, it was tragic end of that promising development in Czechoslovakia. My cousins and their parents, American cousins, immediately took the car and leaving Czechoslovakia, they left, they were safe. But later on, they told us that on the borders with the West Germany, as they were returning from Czechoslovakia to West Germany, there were a lot of people from Czechoslovakia because finally they could travel. And usually they went to the West Germany or to Italy and whatever possibility, because it was doable at that time. And they ask, for example, aunt and uncle, what to do? Should we return or not? What's going on? Difficult to give them advice. Some of them opted not to return, and quite a bit, actually. But there was a complication. Their kids, in many, many cases, they were in Czechoslovakia because husband and wife, oh my God, we will go to the West Germany and kids are with grandpa and grandma. And, oh, it's not going to be a problem to get the kids. It took them a lot of years. I knew two cases, one family living in Washington, D.C., and it took them 7 years to get the daughter out of Czechoslovakia, and another couple in Chicago area, it took them 10 years to get two kids from Czechoslovakia. And again, nobody was criticizing that behavior, whatever. So it was that unfortunate end of hope. The normalization started after 1968. There were several kind of like demonstrations I remember. For example, 1969, Americans landing on the moon. Everybody glued to the television, and all reporters still excited about it. They were talking so nicely, positively about Americans. And we learned later that everybody who was talking on the TV or radio lost jobs, and they were kicked out of television and radio because they were talking too positively about American imperialists. And we had a saying afterwards that Bolsheviks, look who is jumping on the moon instead of you. Then there was another big celebration because Czechoslovakian hockey team defeated the Soviet hockey team in 1969. I think that it was a World Cup or European Cup. And it was unbelievable. Prague was full of people. People were celebrating. Even though the Czechoslovak team didn't get any medal at that time, but for us, it was sort of like, it had a little bit different meaning. And we knew that Czechoslovakian teams in the past had to lose to the Soviets. It was perhaps the pattern. because how come that all of a sudden they won? So we were finishing, I was finishing high school and what to study. University also, college, free, and everybody's, oh, you were so lucky. Okay, yes. And to start with, to get to university. I didn't like math, I didn't like physics, sciences, so humanitarian subjects, colleges were, they were accepting so little. So I was looking what to do, and I found out that librarianship, to study this, they were accepting far more people. So I opted for it. As I told you, no discussion, even at the university college level studies. We were practically listening. Then when there was examination, we were just repeating what we were told. No expression of your opinions, absolutely no challenging, nothing. Only within small circle of good friends you really know good. We were gathering in my friend's apartment, tiny studio. They were lucky enough. It was almost a miracle. They got married, and I was an old maid. So I was listening to my friends, and my friends were starting to seriously think about how to get out. Because they had friends in the Netherlands, they were very supportive, they were visiting Czechoslovakia, and they suggested, if you opt for it, we will help you. So they had son, a small boy, and they had to wait till he was 3 years old, because there was a chance to get permission, like the whole family, to travel. Because usually the kids could not travel until they were 3 years old with some organized trip. And there was no absolutely chance to get permission to go on your own. So they started to talk about it, and then they were very firm. Okay, when our son is 3 years old, we are first opportunity and we are out of here. I thought, oh my God, you know, but they are a couple, you know, family. What, I am just old maid. But all of a sudden I realized, oh my God, yes, there is no light in the tunnel. And I just got it. I told them, yes, I'm doing it. I am with you. And we learned in 1982 that our travel agency is starting to sell the trips to Spain. It was one of those possibilities, not every year. And of course, I would not be interested because it was tremendously expensive. But nevertheless, I was lucky enough, and in December 8, going in front of that travel agency, Chedok, and it was closed, but there were already people, about 15, 16 people, and they were creating the line. And we were given the numbers, and we had waiting list, and we took turns, and with my friends, and 3 days, 3 nights, we were waiting in front of that travel agency. They opened, and I was number 18, my friend's 19, and we were lucky. We got the trip, we bought it. The trip was 12,000 crowns at that time, 1982. My monthly income at that time was perhaps 2,000 crowns. So go and figure. I put all my savings into it. I would never ever do something like that had I known that I am doing one-way trip. We bought the trip, but it was not a done deal yet.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Yarmila Henderson of Girdwood. She shared the story of her escape from communist Czechoslovakia at an event hosted by the Alaska Veterans Museum on January 11th.
We bought the trip, but it was not a done deal yet. We had to ask for permissions We had to ask our employer. We had to ask the local Communist Party, although we were not members of the Communist Party, and the Red Unions organization. So we got permissions, and then we were waiting for the last permission from the Ministry of Interior, I guess, and it was sort of like piece of paper, okay, Mrs. Comrade, this and this can go and participate in that trip. And it was attached to our passports. I remember May 9th, 1983, early in the morning, 5 o'clock, nobody in the streets, getting in front of the travel agents, and there was a bus taking us to the airport. I still remember empty street. It was the day in Czechoslovakia was celebrated like end of the Second World War. And there was a poster, damaged by wind, with the Soviet Union forever, which was normal. And we boarded the bus, got to the airport. I was 30 years old. It was my first trip by plane at that time. And we had to pretend that we are really going to small ski resort in Spain for 2 weeks. So our luggage was tiny luggage. We took some swimming suit and some shorts, and we could not take anything else. And we just got on the plane, landed in Barcelona, boarded the bus, and took us to the small ski resort. I forgot the name, unfortunately, but nevertheless, we were in the hotel. Small hotel, nice ski resort, nice beach and sea. Our leader of that trip, it was about 40 people, interestingly enough, told us at the very beginning of the trip, hey, people, look all over there, there are two gentlemen, and they are members, they are supposed to keep an eye on our trip, on you. They are members of the secret police. And I don't know still why she told us. Either she was kind of feeling that we had some intentions, my friends and me, or she was warning us, don't do anything because they are people. I was lucky enough that my American cousin was living in Spain because she was studying Spanish in Madrid. She got married. Guillermo, her Spanish guy husband, living outskirts of Madrid. I had their telephone number. I called from the hotel. My cousin answered. I didn't even have to tell her what's going on. She knew. And my friends got in touch with their friends in the Netherlands. And how to do it? We befriended two gentlemen from the Switzerland. They were visiting that area also, the same hotel. We told them about our intention, and they understood because they knew some people. They defected from Czechoslovakia in 1968, living in the Switzerland. And they told us, oh, we will help you. At the very end, last day of the trip, everybody, you know, summoned into the dining room area, and we pretended that we are checking our luggage, and the people, those gentlemen from the Switzerland, they were waiting for us behind the hotel. We took our small tiny luggage and they took us to the outside, and I was waiting for the bus. I was able to buy the trip, a bus ticket from that area to Madrid, because I was allowed to have some pocket money. My friends got the money from their friends from the Netherlands, and they were able to buy the ticket from Alicante to Amsterdam. So I remember I was trembling, terribly nervous, waiting for the bus. finally the bus came. I boarded the bus and arrived to Madrid. My cousin and her husband waiting for me. I was so relieved, and I was with them, and my cousin took me to the Spanish police, what to do, how to apply for asylum, how to manage the situation. First question the Spanish police ask, do you have your passport? Yes, I do. And they told me, you're lucky, because sometimes reportedly it happened that the leaders or those people from the secret police accompanying the trips, they were taking the passports from people. And so from this point of view, we were lucky. They told us to get in touch with the International Rescue Committee, nonprofit organization helping refugees from around the world. And I wanted to go to the United States. I had official interview with those people, and I was accepted, and it was big relief. International Rescue Committee people suggested to write official letter to my parents that I decided to stay, to not return, because they told me they can show it in, you know, just authorities, and this is the practice we are suggesting. So I did it. And I was accepted like a refugee from the communist country. September 22nd, 1983, I'm boarding the plane in Madrid and flying to New York. I remember at that time there were people from Iran, refugees being processed also and accepted in the United, by the United States. And in New York, we were summoned, about perhaps group of 15 people. And we were just processed again. And I was waiting for the connecting flight to Chicago, where my uncle, my mom's brother, who defected in 1958, lived with his family. I learned that my American cousin living in Spain several months later got the job with the International Rescue Committee, because she speaks English, of course, Spanish, Czech, understood Slovak language, and maybe even a little bit Polish. And I believe that she was still working with the International Rescue Committee and was sent to Yugoslavia when the civil war erupted over there, and she was helping refugees, process the refugees from the former Yugoslavian Republic to the United States. So I was met at Chicago by my aunt and uncle and their two kids, my cousins, and was living with them. But my goal was, finally, I have a chance to do it on my own. And of course, they helped me, but I could not expect to live there forever and take money. They were normal people with two kids going to college, right? So I got a first job in law firm Baker & McKenzie in Chicago, and it was the law library. And with the help of the director of this library, who was a Czech guy who defected in 1948. And of course, people were helping other refugees, so I was one of those. And then in 1984, I learned that the Reagan government was expanding the broadcasting time to all those communist countries, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria, you name it. And my relatives told me, oh, you know, just, hey, apply for the job. I did it, and I was accepted. And in April 1985, I started to work with the Voice of America, broadcasting into Czechoslovakia. I could not write a note to my parents. We could exchange notes, of course, I could write, but we had to be very careful. We could not comment on political situation, of course, and I could not even mention this in the letter that I am accepting the job with Voice of America. Voice of America was jammed in Czechoslovakia, especially in big cities. So one of those days, my mom and dad were in a small, tiny village, and they were listening to the radio and Voice of America, and my mom is making the remarks, oh, there is somebody new. Oh, I can feel the stage fright. Oh my God, this is our Yaya. Yaya is my nickname in the family. So this is the way they learned that I was working with Voice of America. Interestingly enough, it happened to me several times in the United States when I'm told people that I used to work with Voice of America. They told me, oh, our American propaganda. Again, you know, just it's very sad because they, the people, some, I admit, they did not understand what it was for people behind the Iron Curtain. We didn't, there was no American propaganda. The only piece officially reflecting the official opinion of American government was the editorial, one piece. Be translated from English into Czech. News items was, they were written by normal news agencies, and we were picking up what we thought that it's relevant to those areas. We were telling them what's even going over there behind the Iron Curtain, because not everybody had connection with dissidents' circles. And we were, for example, presenting some literature. We used to call it the reading from the uncensored literature. Those books, they were printed in the West or within the Samizdat in Czechoslovakia. And I thought that it was sort of like mission, part of the mission. And I was working and trying to live in the big city, Washington, D.C., befriended an American guy, and we were boyfriend and girlfriend. And he was, of course, very impressed by my past, and at that time I was impressed by his past because he was fighting some federal government agency, and all of us, I got, of course, I was eligible for American citizenship in 1989. I got American citizenship in July 1989, and it was a very beautiful ceremony. My boyfriend was over there. His mom came also visiting because she was kind of curious, and everybody loved it. And we were working, and all of a sudden, November 1989, Annus Mirabilis miracle happened, and nobody expected it. And we were still on air, 1989, Berlin Wall coming down, and we were so excited, so absolutely enthusiastic about the development. We could not even believe the situation, because looking back in 1983, if somebody had told me that something like that may happen, I would never ever believe it, really. So it was an unbelievable event, and I started to talk about trip to my old country to see everybody after 7 years. September 1990, going back to my old country, my boyfriend coming with me, and we are in Prague, met with my dad, and at the airport, everybody's so excited, we are excited, and my parents, my grandma, my sister, brother, nephews, uncles, aunts, everybody happy. And then we started to talk. I know that when I didn't return from my trip, it was very painful for my parents. Not that the secret police or police were coming to the apartments, but my mom and dad were summoned to the infamous Bartolomiejska Street, the headquarters of the Czechoslovak secret police. And the first question at that time they were asked, is there anything left? I didn't have anything because I was living either with my parents and there with my grandma. Had I had something, for example, car, we didn't have a car, whatever, everything would be confiscated. My friends, they succeeded in getting to the Netherlands. They were lucky enough to rent that small, tiny apartment. They didn't have any basic things. Everything was confiscated. And it was normal practice over there. So my boyfriend asked for my hand, my mom and dad, and they were so excited. Maybe that old mate is not gonna be old mate anymore. And we had a wonderful time. And I noticed that Prague was a little bit updated, but not that much. And after that big change, it was coming over there, it was very, of course, confusing for people and older generation, but people were basically at the very beginning excited. I invited my mom before our son was born, and I don't know, she was perhaps over 60s, and it was her first flight ever again, and to the United States. At that time, I was living already in Alaska because we got married and my husband wanted to fly, so he returned to Alaska to Mark Air and I joined him. And I was lucky enough that I got the job with the Department of Veterans Affairs, librarian returning to my profession. So since 1993, we have been living here in Girdwood, actually, and I've been working in Anchorage. 1997, an old lady having a miracle baby, and my mom coming perhaps four times helping me, and wonderful. And we are visiting my old country because the trip is pretty much demanding. And Prague is unbelievably beautiful. After all those years, they were finally restoring it, repairing it, and I'm standing above the Prague, and one of the most beautiful view, and I'm looking at this beautiful city and almost crying. How many talents wasted? How many opportunities missed? Thank you for your attention.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Yarmila Henderson of Girdwood. The Alaska Veterans Museum hosted her talk entitled Escape from Communist Czechoslovakia, recorded at the Experience Theater in Anchorage on January 11th, 2014. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online anytime at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Platt. Thanks for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.